Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Michelle. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a romance writer. I have been writing. I actually, Wildflower Season, the book we're going to be talking about, is my 36th book published with Harlequin and my 41st overall. So it's really exciting to get to make a living doing this thing I love. I am originally from the Midwest, but I've spent over half my life now in Colorado. And I love the mountains. I love walking. I don't love skiing, which makes me a little bit of an anomaly out here. But mostly I love to be in front of my computer or reading. So I'm excited to talk books today.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited to talk books with you. And congratulations on all those books you published. That's like a huge feat, you know?
Thank you.
That's amazing. So let's chat about romance reading and romance writing. Were you a romance reader before you started writing romance, or was it, which one came first?
The reading came first for me, but I feel like I was late to the party, especially within the Harlequin reader community, which I think is an amazing aspect of it. So many readers have gotten their first introduction to romance through their mom or their grandma, or they got subscriptions when they were younger. And I didn't pick up my first romance novel until I was 30 years old. And it was in an airport bookstore, and it was really just, I was afraid to fly and I was traveling for work. And it was a Johanna Lindsay book, a historical romance. And it totally made me forget about my fear to fly. I was so captured by the stories. And so I went on a real book binge, and I read a lot of Julia Quinn, which I'm so excited for her success with Netflix and the Bridgerton series, because I love that series from way back. And then got into contemporary romance with Susan Elizabeth Phillips and, of course, Nora Roberts. And then I had kids, and I was really silly. I was starting to work part-time instead of full-time. And I thought, well, this is great. I'll work part-time. I'll have two babies and I'll write on the side. Like, you know, my babies will sleep all day. I don't know what I was thinking. But at that point, I knew the stories. I had always liked to write, and I'd always been an avid reader. And I realized the stories that were in my head were romance plots. And so I thought, this is what I want to do with my life. And so it was sort of, you know, spotty at first. And I joined Romance Writers of America and my local writing groups. And I learned a lot about craft and just kept plugging along and plugging along. And eventually, when my youngest daughter started kindergarten, I told myself, this is it. You've either got to make this work or you've got to go out and get a real job again. And that's when I got my first publishing contract. So I've been going full steam since then, but I feel lucky to have, you know, to be able to make a living at this thing that I love to do more than anything.
I love this so much. Yes. I love your journey. Like, you know, just for romance, I discovered romance late in life too. So it's like a process of like, you discovered this whole genre and there's like, all of these authors are prolific and they write great stories and they all end happily ever after. You know, it's mind blowing.
And I thought, oh my gosh, why did I spend all of this time reading these really downer books that were beautiful, but I love a happily ever after. So yeah, it was, I think the romance genre is just, you know, amazing for that sense of hope that it gives readers.
I love this. And you write for Harlequin. So is there, talk to us about that experience. Because I feel like Harlequin is like iconic romance, you know, like they have all different category lines. They also have the trade paperback. They have like all this different, but it's mainly romance. Like it's like romance, you know.
It is. They're really known for romance. And they were really, you know, one of the first traditional publishers to really champion the genre. I write both the single title, the trade publication books, and then also category for Harlequin, which I love both balancing the longer and the shorter stories. But I think the house has such a great history, and I feel like they're really champions for readers and for authors to be able to tell the stories that are in their hearts. So I've had a really great experience, and also met a lot of, you know, other wonderful authors who write for Harlequin. So the reader community is great, the author community. So it's all good.
It's all good. Yeah, I love this. So I've been asking this question because I'm curious a little bit. What has been something that sparks joy? Like whether it's a hobby, a passion, or something that you just like that you do, and you just like time flies by. You just gotta do it because it feels like fun. There's like no purpose, you know. Yeah, that can be writing too, but sometimes writing can be a job. So.
It is, and that's a great point because I do love the writing, but it is for sure a job. And there are sometimes when a scene comes really easily and that's like a gift, but there are a lot of times where sitting down at the computer does feel like work. Things that spark joy for me, really being outside, and I have two dogs that I love to hike with. So I do that a ton. And, you know, we're recording for a podcast. That was something that during the pandemic, when we were, you know, sort of a lot closer to home, I discovered, I knew there were podcasts, but now I feel like I'm addicted to podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I just always love to be learning something new or having something in my ear. I do a lot of gardening, although I'm not especially good at it, but I do enjoy getting my hands dirty and just, you know, working with the earth. So I think that's really, it's very grounding, or at least it was, especially last spring and summer when we were just at home, to do something, you know, that felt like it was productive, made me, you know, sparked a lot of joy for me.
Oh, that's so exciting. So hiking is perfect because in Colorado, there's like perfect hiking trails.
There are a lot of hiking trails. Yes.
Oh my gosh, that's perfect. And what kind of podcasts do you listen to? You listen to true crime, some bookish podcasts?
I listen to a lot of bookish podcasts. And I also listen to Joanna Penn has a really great writing podcast for, you know, specifically for authors sort of on the business side. Mm-hmm. I also really like personal development podcasts like Brené Brown and anything that is positive. So I think true crime is really fun, but I'm not a suspense person myself. So I think I wouldn't be able to sleep if I listened to that.
Yeah, I feel like that's like the attention whenever people talk about podcasts, and they're like, you have a true crime podcast? And I'm like, no. Like, and this is like my third show. Like, I've been podcasting since 2015. And like, I started with self-help, personal development, just kind of like just asking those questions. I was like, what sparks joy? What gets you out going? Like, what do you do for fun? What do you do for out of the comfort zone? And that's like my happy medium of like asking those questions, like, and getting to talk to other people. But I feel like true crime, I'm like, I'm a scary cat. Like, I won't be able to go to sleep. Like
that's exactly how I am.
You know, so, but I'm glad. I love this recommendation. So awesome. So how's it been writing in the pandemic? Has it been any easier, any different, you know?
I think for me, you know, and again, it feels like I don't think any of us expected the world to change as much as it has or for as long as it had. when it first started, you know, I was used to working at home, and my husband works out of a hospital, mm-hmm. and my kids are in high school. So I was used to being at home and doing my thing. And I kind of joked with them when the first lockdown happened that I wasn't sure what they thought I did here all day, but clearly it wasn't working because they couldn't seem to get that, you know, I had a job too. When they were here, it was like, oh, okay, we're all here and we're not in school and the hospital shut down. And I was like, yes, but I've still got deadlines. So I think the good thing about it was it really got me a lot more focused. You know, because when I was here all day, it was like I had all the time in the world. And then when my family was here, I didn't want to ignore them. I like them. And so, you know, I got a lot more focused on writing sprints and doing these really focused periods of time. And then I have a group of writer friends here in Colorado where I live that pre-pandemic, we would meet a couple times a month at a coffee shop or Panera and work together all day. And so now we've transitioned into doing sprints via text and really keeping in contact with each other. And I feel like that came from, we all, you know, a few months into the pandemic, we all sort of similarly got burned out of just being by ourselves and feeling very isolated. So it was, you know, I think we all in some ways got more creative about how to connect with people. Mm-hmm. So that's been a great gift.
That's a great gift. I love the whole accountability of text friends. So, you know, and just be more focused. Like, I realize that, you know, the idea of working from home, like, you have all this time in the world. I'm like, really, just like, you're productive at certain times of the day. You might as well just be productive and get the most important things done. And then you can have the free time to dabble, you know, do your laundry or spend time talking to a friend or be in social media, whatever it is that you do. But at least you're getting, you know, your work done, you know, at a certain point.
Yes, I totally agree with that. So that's what I've tried to do. But, you know, and I, when you work from home, it is sometimes sad that laundry seems like the better option than like working through a really hard part on the project you've got going.
Yes, I agree. I'm like, the laundry restaurant is like, oh, I just, I'm gonna do laundry. It's so exciting. Yeah, but then you go back. I think you know what it is. I realize this is something, is that you may go do the laundry or may go for a walk and you get a breather from that hard task, and you come back with a fresh set of eyes, and you might be able to power through more quickly or more effective because you had that breather of rest period, you know.
Yes, that and I totally see that, and I think that when you have a job that is, you know, it's a job and there are deadlines and there are business parts of it, but also, I mean, writing fiction is inherently a really creative process, and something, you know, I think I took for granted, it was just having that space and that time mm-hmm. to think about things. Like mm-hmm. a lot of times for me, when I'm plotting or if I get to a part of the story that's kind of tangled, you know, it might just be, you know, mindlessly doing laundry or taking the dogs for a walk and giving my brain a little bit of space to, you know, process through some things. So I feel like I'm more intentional about that time, you know, appreciating that time and realizing that's valuable too, as opposed to just a task list and productivity and all of those things.
Yeah, it's like, it's just like doing, I think it's what it does. I feel like it shifted the focus on like being always productive, like 100% productive or 200% productive, and be like, let me just make it in a way that I can actually be efficient and do it, but at the same time, you know, be present to the experience, you know, and whether it's like taking breaks or having family around, having all these different distractions that once upon a time you didn't have, then you have them. You're like, you know, I like these people. I want to spend time with them. And then come back and like, okay, I fixed this problem, or this idea came up, or, you know, I have a book idea and it simmers for a year. And then I'm just ready to write it down when it's like, when it's cooked, you know, ready, you know.
I actually know people who keep a little hanging notepad thing in their shower because that's where they come up with their ideas. My best ideas, I think, come when I'm just about to fall asleep, and my husband always falls asleep quicker than me. So I've gotten really good. I have a huge notepad that I can take notes in the dark and space them out. And so then I'm not waking him up, but I'm getting something down, because you think, oh, this is such a great idea, I will remember it in the morning, and then you wake up and it's totally gone.
Yes. I understand. Oh my gosh, yes. Oh, so good. These are some great tips, you know. So let's talk about Wildflower Season. So what is the elevator pitch for the book?
So the elevator, oh gosh, I'm so bad. I always joke with my editor that I'd rather do a full book than a synopsis or a blurb or an elevator pitch, because it's so much to me. But Wildflower Season is the story of a woman who is starting over in this town. She leaves behind her old life in Magnolia, North Carolina, and she's really pulled in by this kind of dilapidated old house, and she wants to give it a second chance in the way she needs a second chance in her life. So she, but in order to do it, she's got a timeline, and she needs the help of the hero, who is Cam. His name is Cam, and he is a really talented woodworker and furniture builder, but he hasn't done a thing with it since his wife died, and he thinks he's happy far away from that. But, you know, her sort of enthusiasm kind of pulls him in, and they kind of go on this, to me, really great emotional journey together of growth and learning to trust and to love again. And I hope readers enjoy it as much as I do.
Oh, this is so exciting. And this is the start of a new series, correct?
It is the start of a new series. It's the start of the Carolina Girls series. There are 3 books planned in the series as of now. However, the Carolina Girls is sort of a spinoff of my first HQN series, The Magnolia Sisters. Mm-hmm. So once we made it through the sisters, I really loved this world of Magnolia, and readers seem to really enjoy the town and the community there. And so we spun it off into these additional 3 women who will each get a book. And so while it is a new series, fans of the Magnolia Sisters will recognize some of the places and some of the secondary characters. So I hope it'll make happy both new readers and original readers of the series.
I love this. So what is the process to keep all the series straight? Like, keep all the secondary characters, the worlds, the places, the town? Like, how do you keep yourself organized for it?
So I will tell you, because I take a lot of notes, and I am a plotter. So I'm a plotter in that I know the overview and sort of the journey that the characters are going to go on. And then I get into the specifics as I'm writing. But when I started the Magnolia series, I did find a really lovely woman who does series Bibles for authors. And so she really helped me, because there are a lot of secondary characters. And when you spend, you know, 6 books in a town, there's a lot of details and timelines. So she really helps me with that.
Oh my gosh, that's a great job to have. Like, oh my God. Yes, because it makes such a difference. I know, like, when it's great for, as a reader, I love when authors build worlds and we can go back to over and over and over it for multiple books in like 10, 15, I don't know how many books you can have. But I know as a writer, it can be so overwhelming because there's like so many details there and so many stuff that you want to like make sure you're included or like you remember, you forget, and like eye color and all those different things that, you know, they may not, you just forget, you know.
You do. And actually, one of the things, so with each of these books, as well as the books in the Magnolia Sisters and the Carolina Girls, there's a companion novella that goes mm-hmm. with each of the books that is available either digitally or it's included in the print books. And so when I was trying to come up with the characters, and there's a lot shorter, so I've tried to pull out different secondary characters from the town. And I was going through the Bible for the first book, and I remembered this fun firefighter who, you know, was a coworker of the original hero. And I was like, oh, I forgot all about Sam. He would make a great hero for one of these stories. So yes, that it was a real benefit.
I love this investment. That was a good investment. Yes. So I love this. So what is your favorite trope to write? What is your favorite trope to read?
My favorite trope to write, I would say it's probably similar. And it's kind of two sides to the same coin. I love enemies to lovers because I think there's so much, you know, I love all that banter and sort of the will they, won't they of the start. But then I also love friends to lovers because I think there's sort of a sweetness about that when a relationship starts as friendship. Mm-hmm. I would say one of the tropes that I like to use in my writing the most is second chance, or, you know, when they have a history together, because to me, then you can get right into the meat of the emotions and the story that way.
I love this. Yeah. I love all three of those tropes. Like they're, you know, you're catnip. Like I'm like, I'm buying it. And they fit a certain mood when you're in. You're like, you know, want some banter? I go to enemies to lovers. You want some like friendship or even second chance where they know their history, like there is a real reason why they broke up and they're like coming back together, you know, that's where I go for it. Yeah.
I agree.
So let's see. So what has been a book that you read this past year or last year at some point and that you recommend? You can stop thinking about it, you gosh about it, you're like, oh my gosh, anyone should read this book.
So the book that I would say, and it was just such a surprise to me how it shouldn't have been, because it was Kristen Hanna, The Great Alone. And mm-hmm. Kristen Hanna is an amazing, amazing mm-hmm. writer and builds these really intricate, beautiful worlds. But The Great Alone was her book that was set in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And the year before the pandemic, my family and I went on a vacation to Alaska, and coming, you know, we kind of said Alaska is like Colorado on steroids, where mm-hmm. you know, there are mountains here, but the mountains there, you can just feel the wildness of that, you know, that state and the beauty of it. And that book that she, The Great Alone, just captured me in, because I felt like the setting and you could tell that she really had a deep love for this state. And then, you know, as an author, I'm always interested in the backstory. So she does have some personal history with Alaska, with her mm-hmm. family owning property there. And I felt like that came through where, you know, it was just this other character was the setting of it. Mm-hmm. And so that is one that I have been telling everybody, if you haven't read it, read The Great Alone.
It's on my TBR. I think I'm struggling. For me, I love books set in Alaska, and I but it's a tearjerker, and I'm like, I need to be in certain emotional space to do it. Like, it took me years to read The Nightingale, and I love The Nightingale so much, but I had to be in a certain emotional space.
I agree. And people had told me before we were going to Alaska, oh, you need to read The Great Alone. And I kind of read, you know, a little bit about it. And I was like, oh, I don't think I can read that before I go on a fun family vacation. But yeah, there was a period of time where I was like, okay, I'm ready. I just want to try this one. And yeah. I just dug into it.
I love this. Yeah. It's like, it's on my TBR. I own it. I own it in multiple formats. I own it as an ebook and as a real hardback, you know? So
it is a beautiful book, but yes, it is an emotional roller coaster to read.
Yeah. So I love this. Tell us where you can find you online.
So online, I am at michellemajor.com is my website. You can also sign up for my newsletter there. I do a monthly newsletter, and there's always a special giveaway for newsletter subscribers. I'm also on Facebook at Michelle Major Books and on Instagram at Michelle Major Author. And I will just give a little plug that one of the things my family and I do is we foster kittens for a local animal rescue here in town. And so my kittens get a lot of time on my social media things just for fun. So if you like pictures of cute fluffy kittens, you will find them on my social.
Oh my gosh, I'm gonna start following you just because of that. You're like kitten condoms. Yes, I love this. Awesome. Thank you, Michelle, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyourenextblog.com. The What Your Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What You Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.